Izamit Carr, and I'm Telly Concepcion, and together we are Beyond the Numbers Podcast. We go beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. So come learn, grow, and have some fun with us. We are Beyond the Numbers Podcast.
Number 23, His Airness, Air Jordan, MJ, the GOAT. This week, the guys prepare you for ESPN's documentary series, The Last Dance, with a special episode going beyond the numbers of the one and only Michael Jordan. They discuss his pre-championship career, chronicle the first three-peat with the Chicago Bulls, and talk about what they're most excited to learn as the documentary unfolds. But first, their numbers of the day.
My number of the day is $3.14 billion. Jordan Brand had its first billion-dollar quarter in 2019. Their wholesale revenue was $3.14 billion in fiscal year ending May 2019, up 10% from 2018. Michael Jordan's annual take from his deal, according to Forbes, is $130 million. Four times more than the person in second place, which is LeBron James, with an estimated $32 million.
My number for the day is 70. 70 has a 7 in it, trying to stay on theme and point. So on this day, and this day happens to be April 16th, which is Thursday, in 1996, the Bulls broke the 71-72 Lakers single season NBA win record with their 70th victory of the season in an 86-80 win at Milwaukee. Chicago finished the season with 72 wins and 10 losses, which, of course, those of you probably remember was broken in 2015-2016 season by the Golden State Warriors, who went on to have a 73-9 record.
Now, you know I'm out here in the Bay. We don't bring that season up. You know, we don't talk about that season. We don't talk about the 73 wins out here like that. Not yet.
Were they up 3-1 in the finals?
Not yet. Too soon. Too soon, man. Too soon. We'd like to dedicate this episode to some good news. Thank you so much for the good vibes and for honoring all of our heroes in such trying times. It was very refreshing. We've been passing along to our friends and our family, keeping spirits high, so keep up the great work. Thank you again to Some Good News. Before the business, time for our new segment, Before the Business, where we answer all the questions that went unanswered. We find the numbers that went, well, unfound in previous episodes. So last week, we actually told you that were the NBA season to end, Mitchell Robinson would finish with the highest field goal percentage in NBA history at 74.2%. And I'm going to ask me if I knew who owned the record. And actually, I didn't know. But I got that number now. The NBA career record for field goal percentage is actually held by DeAndre Jordan at 66.9%. And the highest field goal percentage for a single season and the record that would be broken by Mitchell Robinson if the season were to end is held by Wilt Chamberlain with a 72.7% field goal percentage in the 1972-73 season. Now on to the business. For our first story today, I want to do things a little bit different. Set the stage and the expectations. So, Amit and I are not basketball guys or NBA guys, right?
Ain't that the truth?
So, Amit's a baseball guy, and you know, he played at Rollins College in Winter Park. I played football at UF. I think basketball is the sport I wish I was better at, because now post-playing career is the only one you can like go to the park and play.
I'm so bad, it's disturbing. It is actually disturbing. Basketball, never. I've never been able to play. I don't know why. It is embarrassing to watch me even attempt to play. And I actually, at Rollins, oddly enough, so we wanted to cover baseball games on the radio for Rollins. And well, they said, you can do that, but you got to do basketball first. And I was like, I have no idea. I don't even know what I can tell you. I can't paint a picture of what's going on the floor for anyone. You have no idea what you're watching. So, yeah, definitely not a forte, but always loved watching pro basketball, college basketball. Always a lot of fun, always high intensity. Big fan. Fortunately, a big Knicks fan, so that's been pretty rough since 1971.
Yeah. And you can argue basketball has the biggest stars.
Yeah, and basketball has the biggest stars, and basketball has guys that can actually take over a game. Because you have such a small team, our big stars can really take over a game, a series. You don't want to talk about, the 73 win Golden State Warriors, but it really was one man that kind of took over the finals.
Oh, man.
Right? When you think about it, it's one dude.
This guy.
No other sport can do that. One guy can't take over a sport like basketball. So we're big fans, and that's part of why we do what we do here. We wanted to kind of get together and get a chance to talk about it, get a chance to dig a little deeper into some of the lore and some of the background. So, just like all of you out there, we just enjoyed watching.
Yeah, so we're 80s babies, and I think that'll, one guy took over. We'll, after this documentary drops, we gonna see who that one guy is. Because the questions are around, but think about this. You're sitting at home, Michael Jordan sitting at home. I think people forgot about me. Everybody's talking about Steph. People talking about LeBron. You're talking about Melo, KD, Kyrie. Let me just drop this 10-part document. There's no sports, right? So we have no other outlet. You got to watch. Every NBA player has to watch this. Every person that's in the sports will watch this. We got nothing else to watch. Let me just drop the mic right here and sip my tea Kermit the Frog style. I'll just leave this right here.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's going to be watching this. And for most of the pro athletes today, I would say the majority of them weren't born in his heyday. So this is going to be, we all know the stories, but we've never actually seen him at his best. So this is going to be fun.
So, yeah. So like we said, this episode will be a little bit different. We wanted to dig beyond the numbers of, a person we watched growing up, a person that was commercials about, a person you've heard the name. I think one of the most recognizable names for our generation. We're both 80s babies. So we're talking about Michael Jordan. And the documentary we're talking about is The Last Dance, which drops today, Sunday, April 19th, when we drop this episode. And we wanted to do things a little bit different and set the groundwork for you as the series starts. And like we said, go beyond the numbers of the man, the myth, and the legend. And actually, the youngest now, like you mentioned, in the league. So it's 2020. So they were probably born in 2000. So they probably never seen Michael play. They might have a pair of shoes. They think Jordans are just shoes, not a person.
Well, yeah, man, it's the same way, like when people open a Word document and they hit save, they see that little floppy disk logo and they're like, oh, that's just what you do to save. You see Jordans, you see that Jumpman logo, oh, that's just shoes.
That's just shoes. So to teach these youngins what we're talking about, where the shoe came from, for our first story today, we wanted to talk about Jordan before championships. So that's the 1984 to 1990 seasons. The numbers for the day for this story, 500,000, 6, 3, 2, and 1. 500,000 is the amount of money Nike signed Michael Jordan to before his rookie year. And it was the richest shoe contract to that point in history. $500,000 in cash a year for the duration of the 5-year contract. Add in the stocks Nike threw in, the deal is worth $7 million. There's 6 seasons to this era that we'll be discussing with you guys or shining a light on. During that time, he was a 6-time All-Star. He participated in the dunk contest 3 times, winning 2 of them. He was a 3-time scoring champ. He got defeated in the Eastern Conference 2 times. He was an MVP of the league, and he suffered an injury that kept him out of most of a season, which I think most of us don't remember. Let's talk about Nike. Thanks, Sonny Vaccaro, for getting this deal done with Michael Jordan. Michael's dream was to sign with Adidas. He still took the deal with Nike to Adidas after that deal was pitched to him. He wore Converse in college and they pitched him, but they already had Larry Bird, they already had Dr. J, they already had Magic Johnson.
And they didn't have any ideas for him. When he went to Converse, he said, hey, what's your big innovative idea for me when I join? They had nothing for him.
Yeah, and they didn't want to pay him more than they were paying those guys, right? Because that'll set the stage. You pay him more, we got to pay these guys more. So
yeah, what was the going rate at the time? 150,000?
Around that, around 100,000
per season. And Nike came back with half a million
per year?
Per season?
Hasn't played. You're talking about Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Dr. J, proven guys in basketball. Yeah. First of all, let's rewind. Converse didn't want to innovate for Jordan. Nike said they'd make shoes however he wanted. Can you imagine wearing a pair of Converse to play basketball in?
Yeah, compared to today.
I mean, that's like throwing on tying flip-flops on you and going and running up the court compared to the type of shoes we have today. I recognize it's the technology of the time, but it's totally different.
But Nike did protect themselves though, right? So in that deal, in order to save themselves and make sure that, you know, if things didn't play out properly, they did say he had to win Rookie of the Year, become an All-Star, or average 20 points a game. So he had to win Rookie of the Year, and he had to either become an All-Star or average 20 points a game in his first 3 years of the deal, right? And if he didn't do that, they could terminate early.
Yeah.
So they had a little bit of safety in their form, but that's still, compared to what everyone else is bringing to them, that's a big difference.
Yep. So $500,000 a year, he still took that deal to Adidas, tried to get them to sign, wouldn't do it. And on October 15th, Nike created the new basketball shoe, as the commercial said.
On September 15th, Nike created a revolutionary new basketball shoe. On October 18th, the NBA threw them out of the game. Fortunately, the NBA can't stop you from wearing them. Air Jordans from Nike.
They were banned, Amit. Banned. Straight up banned. I signed a shoe deal. I signed with this company. The shoe gets banned. What's up with that?
I mean, it's great. See, that's the piece that some people kind of know about, because Nike every couple of years will throw those black and reds back out there as the banned edition. Charge $250, $300 for the same pairs that were out there when he first signed. And that may be the only piece of this that people kind of know. I don't even think people always know why they were banned.
So they were banned, actually. They went for $65 when they dropped. And they were banned because they were not consistent with NBA color standards at that time. The red and black didn't go with the NBA standards. They banned them. You know what Nike did? We're going to pay all the fines, use this all season. Jordan only goes on to become Rookie of the Year that season, averaging 28.2 points per game on 51.5% shooting. It's got to be the shoes. It's got to be the shoes, right? So he beat out Hakeem Olajuwon that season, who was actually the first overall pick in that draft. And believe it or not, do you know what pick Michael Jordan was, Amit, in his draft?
Oh, man. I don't remember.
He was third! Third! My man was picked third! Third!
Who was second?
Michael Jordan was third.
Who was second?
Exactly. 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 Who was second? That's the question. Who was second? In addition to 28.2 points per game, Jordan averaged 2.4 steals a game, 6.5 rebounds, 6 assists, and he averaged 38 minutes a night. So can we check that off of the Nike contract box?
I mean, yeah, he got it. I paid him.
We can check that one off.
He hit their marks.
So not only did he win Rookie of the Year by beating Hakeem Olajuwon, he also was invited to participate in the All-Star Game that year. So he made the All-Star Game as a rookie, and he participated in the dunk contest, which has been argued as one of the best dunk contests, greatest dunk contest in NBA history, which also featured Clyde the Glide Drexler and a man by the name of Dr. J. All you just imagine the fro, the stroke under the basket, coming back around and dunking it. That's Dr. J. Michael went on to become second place in that dunk contest. And then the controversy of the freeze out began, where all the stars colluded against Michael Jordan and refused to pass him the ball on the Eastern Conference side and actually played hard defense on him on the Western Conference side. And this began his feud with Isaiah Thomas. But in the first game after that, the first Bulls-Pistons game following the freeze-out, Jordan goes on to drop 49 points, 15 rebounds, 5 assists, and 4 steals while holding Isaiah to just 19 points. Ouch. Actually, we should say that's ice cold. That's ice cold right there. That was cold. See what I did there?
Yeah, Jordan was definitely one to hold a grudge. He'd come back at you hard. You see that throughout his career. He made statements in games.
Yeah, and a lot of his success is credited with that. And, you know, looking at today's NBA landscape and talking, you know, guys were guaranteed certain things. You can argue that the All-Star game now is a popularity contest, but you got to remember, in Jordan's day, when he made the All-Star game, when he went to the dunk contest, the All-Star game was more dominated by stars. So you have a rookie coming in, and that's why the guys got jealous. He wore his Nike jumpsuit to warmups that season before the game, and they didn't like that, froze him out of the game. The dunk contest always had the best players participate also. So, you know, he had a lot more competition, but a lot of that fueled his fire and led him to, you know, the greatness that was Michael Jordan.
What's that fun fact you have about the pictures of the dunk contest?
Oh, man.
What about that iconic dunk? Tell us about that iconic dunk, Tyler.
So Jordan won back-to-back dunk championships in 87-88. The dunk occurred in 1987, where he takes off from the free throw line, sticks his tongue out, one hand's up in the air, the other hand is behind him. It's the iconic Jordan brand logo to this day. That dunk took place for the first time in 1987. The picture that we all know and love is from the 1988 dunk contest when he did it again, even better. And the picture was even better because they had better angles to take the picture from. In 1987, that dunk only got him 49 out of 50 points that year. Criminal.
Only. It wasn't perfect.
Only got him 49 out of 50. But you know what it got him? You know what it got him?
What it got him?
Cha-ching. Paid. Paid a lot more money, right? Because that's he did it in the shoes.
That's right.
So let's go through the 86-87 season. So he got injured his second year and didn't play very much, but he recovered in time for the 86-87 season, where he had one of the most prolific scoring seasons in NBA history. He became the only player other than Will Chamberlain to score 3,000 points in a season while averaging a league-high 37.1 on 48.2% shooting. Amit. Please. I know you got some modern day like examples we can use here. Yeah. Just to put it in perspective, I think numbers are one thing, and we're beyond the numbers, so we want to go beyond the numbers, but we also want to add perspective.
Yeah, so let's look at that, right? So when you look at those that league average 37.1 points a game, right, after an injury season, James Harden, who is arguably the most prolific scorer in the NBA right now, right, this year, in this sort of shortened, they've only gotten through 64 games so far this year, is averaging 34.4 points, right? Now, if we look at Jordan's 86-87 season, he scored a total of 3,041 points over the 82 games that he played. How many points did Harden have through the season so far? 2,096 through 61 games that he's played in, 64 games that the team has played in. So to put that into perspective, they've got 18 games left in the season. If the NBA were to start up in a month and a half, he would have to score over 52 points a game in every game through the end of the season to hit Jordan's number of 3,041 points.
Ain't gonna happen.
Also, not gonna happen. And you should note, because the game has changed, Jordan, in his 15-year career, had 11 seasons where he played at least 80 games. At least 80, right? And many seasons he played all 82. Started all 82, played all 82. Harden has only started 80 or more games four times in his 11 seasons.
Man.
Four. So when it comes to load management and playing, and I get that Harden was not the man when he first started in the league, right?
I was going to say, he came off the bench at Oklahoma City. So we got to be fair. We got to be fair to James Harden. He did come off the bench in OKC behind Kevin Durant, behind Russell Westbrook.
But for what it's worth, even off the bench, his second year in the league, he did play in 82 games. He only started in five, but he played in 82.
Okay, so
and that's included. That's included in his four total. Ooh. That's one of those four.
So he didn't start, but he played. And okay, credit where credit is due. So Jordan was scoring at a historic clip, 86-87. But on the defensive side of the ball, he became the first player in NBA history to get 200 steals and 100 repeat. Michael Jordan blocked 100 shots in a season, becoming the first player in NBA history to steal 200 and block 100 shots. And he did it twice. He did it twice, and he did it back to back. Amit, has anybody else accomplished such an enormous feat?
Funny you ask. It's actually crazy. So no one has done it since Jordan did it in 88. Let me rephrase that. No one's done it twice. There's only two other people that have done it once. Hakeem did it in the 88-89 season.
Okay, so he copied.
Pippen did it. And then Pippen did it in the 89-90 season.
Taught the teammate how to do it.
No one has done it since then. Zero people.
I'm done with this guy, in reference to one of my favorites, my cousin Vinny. I'm done with this guy. I'm done with this witness right here. Okay. What else did he do that season, Amit? Is anything else stand out to us from that season?
So my man MJ became the third player in NBA history.
Michael Jordan?
Third. To make 830 or more free throws in a single season. The only two others that have done it 830 times or more, Jerry West and Wilt Chamberlain. Only two others. And the interesting fact is, those 833 that he made were off of 972 attempts. Wilt, on the other hand, managed to knock down 835. But he did it off of 1,363 attempts. Yeah. That's crazy. But we forget Jerry West. Jerry West knocked down 840, which is the most all time. And he did it off of 977 attempts. Ooh. So he was at a pretty solid clip there. People forget There's a reason he's the logo.
Yeah, you're talking about the logo. These are two of the greatest of all time. No arguments, no questions asked with Jerry West and Will Chamberlain. And Jordan, in his third season in the league as a pro, is matching numbers here. I would also like to know, Ahmed, what constituted a foul in the 80s? And what constitutes a foul now? If you blow on a guy, that's a foul. Did not LeBron get a foul called when Lance Stevenson blew on his neck? That's a foul now in today's game. I watch highlights from the 80s, and unless you threw an elbow at a dude's face, it wasn't called a foul. That happened 900 plus times?
No, yeah, it's crazy. They would get beaten up. And it was often his later in life partner and teammate, Dennis Rodman, who was doing some of the throwing and some of the hitting and some of the pushing.
Oh yeah,
a lot of those bad boy Pistons would beat
bad
up.
Bad boy. That's the reason they called them bad boys.
But we digress. So he did all of those amazing things last season.
We just rattled it all off, and despite doing all of that, MJ won league most valuable player. But I ain't talking about Michael Jordan. I'm talking about Magic. They gave it to Magic. Lead the league in scoring. Only player to get 200 steals, 100 blocks, most free throws, third most free throws of all time. In your third season, Magic Johnson gets the MVP award over you. What's up with that?
What you gonna do? It's Magic.
And that actually shows, you know, getting to our point here about the different eras. In that time, 80s and 90s basketball, mostly in the 80s, superstars were born from championships. They weren't just who you were, your personality. You had to be a champion to be respected as one and to be viewed as one. And Magic's Lakers were getting the championships every year. And Isaiah was getting the championships. Larry Bird, those guys were proven winners. And those guys has had team success. And Michael Jordan, despite all his accolades, wasn't viewed in the same light as those guys. And that fueled his fire. And that's what had him, you know, go on a tear in the 90s.
And to your point, right, what was, you know, when we look at MJ's playoff history early in his career, what happened early on? 3 straight first round exits and only 1 playoff win.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. And then he ran into the bad boys. And the Pistons got him. Right? The Pistons got him the next 3 years.
Yeah, so that's 6 years of really getting beaten up in those NBA in playoffs in general. But to your point, that fueled the fire that we see in the next cut of his career.
For our second story, we'll talk about Michael Jordan's first taste of glory. The first three-peat. By design, we'll be keeping the sections about the three-peat short, but here are the highlights. Our numbers for this story, 3, 2, and 1. During this time, Michael Jordan made 3 finals appearances and won 3 finals MVPs. He won 2 league MVPs back-to-back, and he exercised 2 demons. And 1, he established himself as the undisputed best player in the league. And you can argue he was at the top of the mountain after slaying those demons. And we'll get into that in a piece. So the 90-91 season, Jordan won his second MVP after averaging 31.5 points a game on 53.9% shooting, 6 rebounds a game, 5.5 assists a game, and that was for the regular season. The Bulls went on to set a franchise record with 61 wins. And they had a 15-2 record in the playoffs. Now, Ahmed, that's pretty crazy.
15-2 is crazy. And in those 2 losses to Philly and the Lakers, he dropped 46 points to the Phillies. And then he had a cool double-double with 36 points and 12 assists in the game 1 loss to the Lakers in the finals. That's crazy. So
he did his part. And then they met the vaunted Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals with Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer, the Bad Boys we talked about, and Dennis Rodman was part of that team as well. They go on to sweep the Pistons. And as I said, he exercised that first demon. Keep in mind, he had lost the Eastern Conference Finals twice to Detroit in the previous two seasons, and they lost in the second round of the playoffs to him. So that was three consecutive losses for Jordan and the Bulls to these Pistons that they were able to avenge those losses. Went on to the finals and had a gentleman sweep of Magic and the Lakers, dropping only game one. And Jordan's stats for that.
When Jordan got into the finals that year, he averaged 31.2 points a game. He had a 56% shooting from the field, 11.4 assists, 6.6 rebounds, 2.8 steals, and 1.4 blocks a game on average. And if I remember correctly, that game one that they lost was at home.
Yeah. And if I'm hearing you correctly, he basically averaged a triple-double for the finals. A double-double for the finals.
Yeah, it's crazy. 31, 8, and 2. And then it's just a double-double for the whole finals. That's crazy, especially back then.
Yeah, and against you're talking about the Lakers, the 80s Lakers, the vaunted, you know, Magics on that team. That was a deep squad. James Worthy was on that squad. Sam Perkins, like, that was a really deep squad. And they had won, you know, several years before. And that era was known for the Lakers-Celtics battles. Here, they're thinking they're getting a fresh-faced team in the Bulls. They're thinking they're going to cash it in. No Celtics this year. Automatic championship. Michael stopped that from happening.
You just said 80s Lakers, and this was 90.
Oh, this was 90. Okay, 89, 90. Okay, 90, 91. I mean, that's
new decade, new team.
You're right. New decade, new team. Probably the most memorable image from this finals is what's known as the switch. And I think if you watch the finals now, they show it before every finals game. But basically, when Michael's going to the rack with his right hand, switches the ball to the left midair, lays it up, makes it anyways. This is also when Jordan won his first finals MVP trophy. And the other image you'll remember from this finals, he's on the ground crying with the trophy, weeping those tears of joy. Are there any modern day comparisons, Amit, between Jordan's performance in these playoffs?
Well, it's kind of interesting you bring that up. Well, first of all, it's interesting to note that it's his first finals win, right? First time they won in the NBA Finals. And it was his 66th through 70th career playoff games. So like you said, he had been through his ups and downs earlier in his career, he had a good amount of experience. This wasn't like his first run through the playoffs, right? So he averaged that double-double, right? 31 points, 11 assists, a little over 6 rebounds through that entire playoff series. And it made me think about the 2016 playoff series against the team you got out there in California, Golden State, was it?
Yes, the Warriors.
And I brought it up because I think a lot of people then, 3 years ago, talked about how kind of LeBron took over and kind of carried those finals. And if you look at LeBron's numbers, and keep in mind, right, so that was Jordan's 66th through 70th career playoff game.
Yes.
This is LeBron's 193rd through 199th career playoff game.
So he had some experience. Suffice it to say, he had a lot of experience to this point.
And he had a lot of miles behind him too, right?
Yeah.
And you look at that series, he averaged just under 30 points, 29.7 points, 8.9 assists, 11.3 rebounds. I mean, he had a pretty solid, he almost had a triple-double if you think about it with the assists.
Yeah.
More assists here and there, he would have knocked it out. But comparatively, that kind of puts into perspective Jordan's averaging 31 points and 11 assists in a very different game, too.
Yeah, of course. A different game, different series, and level of competition too. I think the only stat that matters for LeBron's 2016 finals is the block. One block. That was it. That was the most important.
That's true. That's true.
So now the second championship of the three-peat, this first three-peat for Michael Jordan, 91-92 season, the Bulls go 67-15, so they improved their record from the year before. Jordan won his second consecutive MVP award, averaging 30.1 points a game, six and a half rebounds, 6.1 assists per game on 52% shooting. We get to the playoffs, and I believe they met your Knicks, and that was a 7-game series at the Garden? At the Garden. So, right. Yeah, I know that's probably a painful one, but I remember that series because, you know, being born in New York, I was a Jordan first fan, but I was always a Knicks second, John Starks, Allen Houston, Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, like that. You know, that was also my squad. So as a youngin, I was a little torn during those playoffs, but it was Michael Jordan, right?
And Jordan gave them a run for their money in that series. His numbers were crazy. He averaged 43 minutes a game. He shot just over 47%. And he averaged just over 31 points a game. Oh, and in that game 7 at the Garden, he dropped 42 points.
42 points in a game 7?
42 points in a game 7.
That's called closer.
But you know what's crazy when we look at how the game has changed? You know, in that entire series, Jordan only took 10 three-point attempts in 7 games. And he made 2 of them.
Yeah.
Right? If you look at LeBron in that same series, if you go back to
the 2016
he managed to take a total of 35 attempts in a 7-game series and made 13 of them.
Yeah, the game's changed.
And that's comparing, like, right, from a play style, right? You're not looking at a three-point shooter like Steph Curry, right? Steph Curry in that 7-game series took 80 three-point shots.
Yeah, 80?
And 80 and made 32 of them. He shot 40% from three-point.
Which is good for three-point.
But that's just show, like, that's how it's changed, right? You see those guys and you see them dominate, but they dominate very different ways.
Yeah. And scoring comes in buckets when you can shoot from outside. So that's definitely a big difference in today's game. So we look at the finals. In the first game, Jordan scored a finals record 35 points in the first half. In the first half. Ahmed just told you through the whole playoffs, he had shot 10 three-pointers. Only made 2. In game 1, he made 6 three-pointers in the first half, which brings us to the shrug, which is another rather one of the images you'll remember Jordan by. He's running down the court just shrugging like, I don't even know what I'm doing at this point, after he hit the 6 three-pointer like he couldn't believe it himself. And the Bulls went on to win game 1. They beat the Blazers in 6 games. Jordan won his second finals MVP for the second year in a row. For the series, for the finals, that's when he showed up. And he still holds records for finals averages. He averaged 35.8 points a game, 4.8 rebounds, 6.5 assists, and shot 53% from the floor.
That's crazy.
Which is astounding if you really think about it. And he beat Clyde Drexler, which a lot of people argued was better than Jordan. So as we talk about the Demon Slaying campaign continued, I think a lot of people put Drexler ahead of Jordan. You know, they went head to head in some slam dunk competitions also. And Jordan wanted to put that to bed. Put it to bed. I would say he did. 92-93 season, despite finishing with a 32.6 point per game campaign, 6.7 rebounds a game, 5.5 assists a game, he finished second place for Defensive Player of the Year, and his consecutive streak of MVPs ended when he lost the award to then friend Charles Barkley. So he almost had 3 in a row. They gave it to Barkley, and on January 16th, 1993, Michael Jordan scored a season-high 64 points in a home loss to our Orlando Magic. And it actually be, so we're talking about 1993, that be Jordan's last 60-point game of his career, which is hard to think. Coincidentally, you know, of course, Michael Jordan slaying demons, lost to Barkley in the MVP vote, got to meet Barkley in the finals in 93, averages 41 points a game during the six-game series, became the first player in NBA history to win three straight finals MVP awards. He scored more than 30 points in every game of the series, including 40 or more in four straight games. Okay, I'm not the MVP. Are you sure about that five minutes? Are you sure about that 5 minutes?
It's a solid reference. Now I gotta go watch my cousin Vinny.
But he didn't do it alone, Mohammed, did he? He did not do it alone.
He didn't do it alone. He had his sidekick. You know, he had Scotty. He had Scotty through that entire three-peat. And I think a lot of people forget how good Scottie Pippen was throughout his entire career. I think a lot of guys, when you look at top 50 players all time in the NBA, Scottie's in that list. So he definitely had the skills. But I wanted to talk about Scottie from a monetary standpoint for a second. Okay, Scottie has an interesting story. He's got an interesting story. So Scottie, in those early Bulls years, when they went through that little run, it was 25, 26, 27 for those 3 years. He played in all 245 games through those three seasons in the regular season. And he was paid only, keep in mind, this was, you know, in the early 90s, he was paid $6.9 million.
Okay.
A little over $6.9 million. So he wasn't happy at the time because he was definitely being underpaid compared to some of the other players, not just on the Bulls team, but in the league itself, right? So, you know, that he never really got paid more than $4 million for any given season with the Bulls before he left for Portland.
Okay.
So Scottie comes back to the Bulls at the end of his career. A lot of people forget. Heck, I forgot. Pippen played in 2003?
I forgot.
What?
I forgot, man.
What? So Pippen comes back and he plays two final seasons-ish with the Bulls. And this is where he gets some of that money back.
Okay.
So he got paid $10.3 million over quote unquote two seasons. He really played one season and then like 20 games in the next season where he only started four. So he played a total of 87 games over the last 2 years with the Bulls, started in 64 of those games, and got paid a cool $10.3 million.
I'm not mad at him.
But you talk about baseball players, you know, they get paid at the back end of their career, right?
Yeah.
So they always get underpaid early, and then you have all this amazing production, and then someone overpays for them for really the back, you know, third of what they're going to get. This was Pippen getting his on the back end.
And I'm excited.
Didn't get the money from the Bulls in his prime, but he ended up getting it at the end of his life with the Bulls.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see. I saw an extended trailer to the Last Dance documentary, and they touched on that a little bit. So I'm interested to see exactly how you brought up, how did the numbers work with these Bulls? Because at one point, Michael Jordan wasn't even the highest paid player on that team. Tony Kukoc was the highest paid player on the Bulls at one point. And I'm sure that didn't rub Michael, that didn't rub Scottie, that didn't rub Ron Harper. I'm sure a lot of guys felt a certain way about that. And I'm sure they'll talk about it in the documentary.
Who was that GM over there?
Oh, Jerry Krause.
Jerry Krause. And it's funny, and we chatted about this earlier.
I know that you were
we watched and we but I didn't know who that was or what that was or what he did. And hopefully this documentary will kind of shed some light on some of the tensions they had between the players and the management there. Just specifically from a contract standpoint, but he was a name that I didn't realize there was that much animosity towards him until now.
Yeah, and like we talked about, you know, before we started recording, you're a kid, you're watching your favorite player, you're watching your favorite team. I don't know what a general manager is. I don't know who the general manager, who the owner is. And a lot of times you didn't even really know the coach. I mean, I think Phil just had that type of personality that the media gave Phil a lot of attention. But for the most part on teams, you know, you don't know who the coach is when you're a kid. You just have your favorite player, favorite team. You follow him. You think it's going to last forever. If there's a breakup, you're devastated. We don't really necessarily get behind the numbers, the contracts, and those aspects of it. So it'll be really interesting to see how the greatest, one of the greatest teams, one of the greatest dynasties, one of the greatest players in sport of all time, how that fell apart. Like, how do you let that go? If you have that, how do you let it go? And it sounds from the trailers that it was single-handedly Jerry Krause's doing or undoing of that team, and hence why it's called The Last Dance. They all knew going into the season that this was going to be the last time they would all be together. And, you know, they showed up, and it'll be fun to see the behind-the-scenes cameras and the behind-the-scenes in the locker room and how guys really felt if there's really that much access.
This was, you know, for me, early teens. So, you know, you knew the players, you knew the game, but you didn't know any of that other stuff. None of that stuff. The stuff that registers to us now in our 30s, the money aspect of it, the contracts, how things move around, all that kind of stuff, didn't matter then. So it'll be fun to kind of look back at it and get that perspective and get a better understanding of what the actual conflict was.
Yeah.
And how the players utilize that, not just as probably a motivating factor going into the season, but also sort of the bad blood they had with their own ownership and management.
Yeah. So this capped off a 7-year run for Michael Jordan, where he attained 7 scoring titles, 3 championships, and he was able to win 3 MVP awards. Let's wrap this thing up.
So Jordan did exist in the 80s before winning his championships, and he existed in a big way.
Jordan's first three-peat was able to win 3 finals MVP and slay some demons along the way to establishing himself as the greatest. Ahmed, is there anything you're looking most forward to in this documentary that comes out tonight? Cannot wait.
I want to see how that gambling tendency of his impacted everything he did, because everything you hear from commentators and sportcasters is you put money on the line, you put a bet, and a whole different side of him comes out. So I'm excited to see how that played out during the season.
Interesting. I want to hear about the off-the-court dynamics between the team, the coaches, the GM, the money, like we talked about, the money.
I'm excited.
Thank you for going beyond the numbers with us. We're a weekly podcast dedicated to going beyond the numbers of sports and life to bring you the story within the story of the stories that matter. We're available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Whatever you're listening on now, please be sure to click the follow or subscribe button to get our latest content.
And remember, you can find us on Instagram, Beyond the Numbers Podcast, and on Twitter, at Beyond TN Podcast.
Till next time, peace.